The remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for February 23rd is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lenchowski, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fooley.
Be present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Abaje, present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg, present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Representative Keith Frankie, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
Still in much pain from yesterday's PX90 for Otter Shape Beginners.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
Present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang. Representative John Hewitt. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Jay Zhang. Members, at the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Mr. Lenchowski. A quorum is present. I will advise the clerk to please note the members as they come in. For those that did not make roll call, Representative Murphy, can I get a motion to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of the minutes for February 18th as printed.
Vice Chair Murphy, move approval of the minutes for February 18th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 18th are approved. Members, today we will hear from the Minnesota Department of Transportation on passenger rail, freight rail, and ports, followed by three related bills which will be laid over. Both the MnDOT presentation together have been allotted 40 minutes with member questions taken at the end. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed, Mr. Crum.
Okay, sharing my screen here, Chair. Everybody see it okay?
We can see it. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an update on MnDOT's passenger rail projects currently underway. It's a challenging but exciting time as we move closer to implementing intercity rail in Minnesota. Connecting Minnesotans not only to each other in the region, but to the national network across the country. Okay. Next. Passenger rail has been in development in Minnesota since 2009, and the proposed corridors are identified in the state freight and passenger rail plan. Two projects are well in the advanced planning, or some of the planning is complete for the Northern Lights Express NLX, connecting Minneapolis to Duluth, and the Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago, the second daily frequency of that service between Minnesota and Chicago. Both projects are red lines on this map. You see the Twin City, Milwaukee, Chicago. It was up the lake across Toma, Wisconsin Dells, Columbus to La Crosse, and then Winona, Red Wing, and St. Paul. The dark blue lines on the map are emerging corridors. If funding were available, we'd be working on developing those corridors, the line south to Faribault, Albert Lea, and eventually on to Des Moines and farther south, the line to Mankato, and then the line extension from St. Paul up to Fargo, Moorhead. These projects will be in development when funding is identified and there's local support expressed for those corridors. Right now we have extremely limited resources and we're staying focused on the two projects that that I'm going to be talking about today. The first project I want to talk about is NLX. And this project has been underway, started or reestablishing rail service between the Twin Ports and the Twin Cities. The work began before passenger rail office was created in 2009 by local folks of Northern Lights Express, the St. Louis and Lake County Regional Railroad Authority, and did a lot of the heavy lifting early on. The service is envisioned to provide 4 round trips a day, top travel speed of 90 miles an hour, average speed closer to 60, 65 miles an hour, with 2.5 hour travel time downtown to downtown. The service would connect Minneapolis and Duluth and with stations envisioned in Coon Rapids, Cambridge, Hinckley, and Superior. The first year annual ridership is estimated to be 700,000 people. It's a lot of cars taking off 35W. And we'll use 150 miles of existing Burlington Northern track. Proposed capital improvements include improving safety at the crossings along the corridor. Folks have been used to freight trains running 25, 30, 35 miles an hour along that corridor. There'll be passenger trains moving at higher speeds than that, and folks that cross those crossings every day may not be as familiar with or expecting a train coming the other direction at a higher speed. The project also calls for additional track and platforms at Target Field Station to accommodate these trains and at the depot in Duluth. We're looking at upgrading track along the entire corridor, increased sidings to allow passenger trains to move around freight trains and allow the freight trains to continue their normal schedules. We'd be upgrading rail track along also to allow for higher train speeds, and the capital cost of heavier rail is part of this project. Constructing stations then at Coon Rapids, Cambridge, Hinckley, and in Superior, Wisconsin. Project funding to date planning for the project is completed and environmental approval has been received. The project partners include the Federal Rail Administration, State of Minnesota, St. Louis and Lake County Regional Rail Authority. To date, the state and local sources have leveraged about 53% of total project development cost from the federal government. And state share has been primarily general obligation bonds and with some limited office general fund appropriations as well. Passenger rail planning in Minnesota is not trunk highway fund eligible and always pursued through general funds or GO bonds to do this project development work. Last year, $3 million in GO bonds were provided for Grassy Point Bridge. It's a bridge that crosses the St. Louis River, had some failure issues in the recent past, and is a critical connection for freight rail service between Duluth and Superior points to the east, but also will serve as a connection for NLX when the project is eventually built. As you can see, we've invested $12.5 million in getting the project development work done, a feasibility study, service planning. Service development plan is basically the business case to move forward with the project. and then the required environmental work. Funding needs, a total construction gap of $500 million to $600 million are the 2018 estimates. There's an aggressive effort in Washington with Federal Rail Administration and US DOT to fund projects. So how much of that $500 to $600 million in construction cost would be a state responsibility is yet to be determined. But we're hopeful with the new administration that a continued funding for project development will occur. Next project is the Twin City Milwaukee Chicago. And some of the features are it would add additional frequency to the existing Empire Builder route that goes from Chicago, Seattle, Portland. Eastbound service reliability isn't as great as westbound because it comes all the way from Seattle and there's a lot of things that can occur to the train and weather, so on, construction out in the western part of the country. So starting from St. Paul would provide a lot higher level of on-time eastbound reliability. The Empire Builder currently starts in Chicago, so its on-time reliability to the Twin Cities is fairly consistent and relatively high. We're anticipating 124,000 new riders between the Twin Cities and Chicago. A majority of the riders, ridership is regional travel within the 400-mile corridor. I think in Wisconsin alone, 70% of their riders get on or off in the corridor. A lot of those communities don't have close access to airports or other services, so this provides a good regional link for residents in both states. It utilizes existing stations with complementary travel times Empire Builders. So travel within that corridor could, with a second frequency, be done in one day. Go do your business and be back that night with an additional frequency. Reduced travel time will be through operational efficiencies, a shorter dwell time at stations, no checked baggage, it'll all be carry on, and then also electronic ticketing. Some of the project benefits, you'll hear from others as well, create jobs and generate economic growth along the corridor communities, provide a safe, affordable alternative to driving or flying, increase access to tourism, college events, and communities along the corridor. As an example, a survey of 3,000 college students in Minnesota a few years back, primarily in Winona, said that 41% of students have taken the train to or from school, 60% said they are likely to use it in the future, and 57% said they would take it if the train had more frequent service available. The project status, work on the train has been underway since 2015 when Amtrak partnered with the states to do a feasibility study. Construction capital estimates of $53 million have been determined. $40 million of those improvements are in Minnesota and $12.3 million in Wisconsin. Last year, we have strong partnerships along this corridor. I can't stress that enough. We have the communities along the corridor of Minnesota, the Great River Rail Commission, the project advocates, the state of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, also the Ramsey County Railroad Authority has been a strong funding partner when the state resources have not been there to continue the work. Last year, the Federal Rail Administration had awarded Minnesota and Wisconsin a grant through the Consolidated Rail Infrastructure and Safety Improvement Program, which is really a capital program to help emerging corridors or state-supported services get that jump on getting the capital improvements made to expand service. The CRISI program funds will be used for final design and construction. It's very a competitive program and nationally, and this project fared fairly well compared to other projects submitted throughout the country. Additionally, both states were awarded a restoration enhancement grant, which is meant to support the first 3 years of operations of the service for expanded services, for new corridors, and will help reduce the initial operating costs of the corridor's services. The specific projects in Minnesota are in Winona to extend a siding in the Goodview area, update existing siding and platform improvements at the Amtrak Winona Depot. I believe 2 years ago, this committee went to Winona and had meetings at the depot and saw what sort of situation you have there where folks board or alight the train on the mainline railroad. And there's ADA issues as well there. Mississippi River Bridge and River Junction, it's a choke point or bottleneck for the existing freight service and the current Empire Builder. And you see it'll basically upgrade the switches and convert a yard track into a second main. And then the third piece of projects in Minnesota is a $540,000 to do design work for a light maintenance facility at the former Amtrak depot in Midway. These improvements will increase access for shippers along the corridor and improve safety at crossings, reduce block crossings, and increase the capacity for rail service for the CP rail. Project partners have provided almost $1.2 million of the project development cost with the Chrissy grant for an additional $53 million. I will note that Wisconsin has received two other Chrissy grants for service between Milwaukee and Chicago that will be part of this corridor. The plan is to extend one of the new round trips a day from between Milwaukee and Chicago to the Twin Cities. So those improvements are also part of moving this project forward. We have a strong project partner in developing these projects in Wisconsin and Illinois. At this time, only funding absent here is the $10 million match for the Chrissy application. You can see above Minnesota's contributed Wisconsin. As I mentioned, Ramsey County Rail Authority has been a financial partner for us, and then the La Crosse Area Planning Committee. With the $10 million, that would bring us up to the total estimate of $53 million construction costs for the project. So basically, for $10 million, we're getting $40 million of improvements in Minnesota to the freight system and to accommodate additional passenger service. I mentioned the Restoration Enhancement Grant. Again, it's a three-year operating assistance. The first year, the feds will pay 80%, the second year, 60%, the third year, 40%, and then the fourth year, the states are responsible for the operating subsidy. The funding gap for this project, as I've mentioned, is $10 million. And last year, the governor in his capital proposal, he had $10 million for the project. And in the capital program he released yesterday also includes $10 million for this project. The only funds, again, missing for this project right now are the $10 million that Minnesota needs to provide as match for the Chrissy application. So with that, I'll be available for questions after the other presentation. I want to thank Chair Lee for listening and giving me the opportunity to provide an update to the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Crum. Next up, we have Mr. Gardner, who will be presenting on freight rail. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Gardner. I'm Director of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations at the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Excuse me, I'd like to provide a brief overview of the freight rail system as well as the ports and waterway system in Minnesota, both of which are really critical components of the overall multimodal freight transportation system. For certain types of industries and businesses, either rail and or water are many times the only economically viable transportation options for them for their moving their goods and products. I'd also like to talk a little bit about several of the programs that we administer at MnDOT in support of these systems. trying to advance the slide. There we go. The freight rail system in Minnesota is quite extensive, as you can see here. Some 20 different privately owned railroads operate in the state, providing varying levels of service to communities and businesses. On some of the more lightly used lines, you might only see one or two trains per day. On some of the heaviest lines, you might see as many as 75 trains per day. We're served by four very large, what's called Class I railroads, that also operate in a number of other states, and in some cases, Canada and Mexico as well. These large railroads carry the majority of the freight in the state, both inbound and outbound, as well as some through traffic. But we're also very well served by numerous small regional and short line railroads that operate primarily just within Minnesota. In many cases, the short lines interchange their freight with the larger railroads for access to more distant markets for Minnesota products. Railroads serve the needs of shippers, the Minnesota businesses that might be receiving or sending raw materials as well as finished products. Overall, railroads carry 25% of all the freight tonnage that moves in the state, including the kinds of bulk commodities that you can see here. The larger railroads also transport containers, many coming from overseas through the coastal ports to bring us consumer goods to Minnesota. Container service is also important to us for the export of certain agricultural products like identity preserved grains headed for Asia, as well as the export of products manufactured here in Minnesota. We have two large truck to rail intermodal container yards, one in Northeast Minneapolis, one in the St. Paul Midway area. But in the last few years, we've also seen the construction of several smaller intermodal yards as well, including one in Duluth. A number of years ago, the legislature created the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. The purpose of the program is to help preserve and enhance rail service and support economic development. The program's been used extensively by Minnesota's short lines over the years to help bring old infrastructure up to modern standards and to expand rail service when opportunities present themselves. The program's open also to rail shippers, those companies that want to ship by rail who might need some specialized loading equipment and facilities. Grants are most typically used for track upgrades, bridge reconstruction, and for rail spurs, either to individual businesses or into industrial parks. The program has been supported over the years by bond appropriations, and last year received an appropriation of $4 million. In the next few weeks, we'll be releasing a solicitation for grant applications. And like previous solicitations, we expect that the demand for the grants will substantially exceed the funding that we have available. We're aware of at least $100 million in actively planned rail projects that need some additional funding assistance to implement those projects. Just as a point of comparison with some of our peer state, Wisconsin typically invests $15 million annually in their rail assistance program, while Pennsylvania typically invests about $40 million annually. Another area that we focus on is rail safety, including improving rail grade crossing safety to protect motorists. Working with the railroads and local road authorities over the years, we've made a lot of progress in terms of reducing train vehicle collisions or crashes. But we do have 4,100 crossings of public roads in Minnesota, and only about one third of those have gate arm and signal systems. The remainder rely on simple crossbuck signs or yield signs. Grade crossing accidents, of course, are frequently deadly and can even pose environmental risks. For example, when trucks carrying hazmat are involved in train collisions. We review the risks at individual crossings and then work with the road authority and the railroad to identify needed improvements. These could include installing gate arm and signal systems if none are present, replacing an older signal system, even closing the crossing and rerouting traffic, although communities normally aren't very much in favor of that because it affects access within the community, or even grade separating the rail line entirely from the roadway, which of course is quite expensive, but in situations where train volumes are high and the roadway volumes are high, is many times the best solution. Funding for these types of projects comes from a mix of both federal and state funds. For example, last year, the legislature appropriated $110 million to support grade separations, which is being used for projects in both Moorhead and in Anoka. With respect to ports and waterways, Minnesota is fortunate to be located on both the Mississippi River and Great Lakes commercial navigation systems. Freight is moved by barge to and from other cities along the Mississippi River from Minnesota, or all the way down to New Orleans for transfer to ocean-going ships. Similarly, Minnesota has access to overseas markets via the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Seaway. Minnesota ports are both public and private. Public port authorities include Duluth, which is the largest port on the Great Lakes in terms of the amount of tonnage that moves through the port, as well as St. Paul, Red Wing, Winona, and Wabasha. Savage is an example of a private port where tremendous amounts of grain are moved through. The ports are responsible for their own infrastructure, while the U.S. Corps of Engineers is responsible for channel dredging, harbor dredging, and also maintaining the locks on the river and on the Great Lakes. Here you can see the main products that are shipped to and from Minnesota on the two different systems. Lots of different commodities important for the state's economy. There's also increasing volumes being carried on the waterway system of what's called dimensional freight. For example, products like wind blades and turbines being shipped through the Port of Duluth, which is uniquely set up to accommodate that. By the way, our office then permits those loads, super loads as we call them, after they're unloaded from ships and then transported by trucks on state highways for transportation to wind farms in the upper Midwest. Of course, with winter weather in the upper Midwest, the commercial navigation system shuts down for a few months, but industries have been able to adjust to this. The Minnesota Port Development Program was established in 1994 to assist the public ports with their economic development efforts. The program provides 80-20 grants to improve infrastructure, again, much of which is very old or no longer meets current needs. Example projects include improving road and rail access in and out of the ports, upgrading terminal buildings that handle freight, and rebuilding dock walls. Like the Rail Service Improvement Program, the Port Assistance Program helps fill funding gaps and leverages other types of public and private funding. The 2020 legislative appropriation was $14 million for the Port Assistance Program. We just completed a solicitation and project selection process, and the project should be announced within the next week, if not within the next few days. We are aware of at least $75 million in needed public port projects in Minnesota. Again, as a comparison with peer states, in 2020, Wisconsin provided $35 million in grants for their port assistance program. And with that, I'll bring my presentation to a close and be happy to stand for questions at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gardner, and I would like for you to please share the project list once you have it approved within the next week or so. So right now, we'll move on to member questions, right? Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think this would go to Mr. Crom. Of the track being proposed, how much is existing track? How much is new track?
Mr. Crom.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the majority of this is new track, or is existing track, upgrades to existing track to add capacity and safety improvements. There's a siding or two in the NLX project or an extension of a siding, but there is no new construction and vision outside the current railroad alignments.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Crum. One other quick question. How much of the operating cost and the maintenance do you anticipate being covered by fares?
Mr. Crum.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're looking at approximately 65%, I believe, on the TCMC, the Chicago train, and a similar amount for the NLX service. It's the benefit cost on the project for NLX is well over 1% or one, which means for every dollar we invest, we're getting a positive return on that. So.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is also for Mr. Crum. I'm thinking about the $10 million that is needed in the funding gap for a TCMC project, and I'm interested in what the implications are for job creation and who exactly, generally would be getting jobs through this type of project.
Mr. Crum.
Mr. Chair, Representative, case studies from other areas in the country have showed a significant amount of job creation. As an example, for the NLX project, it's estimated 3,000 jobs and $360 million in wages during construction. Construction track improvements will create jobs on both corridors. That's our estimate. Now we're working on with DEED on economic impact analysis study that should be done shortly. So we'll have a better sense of what that impact is on jobs.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you.
I do have a question for Mr. Crum, you too. In your presentation, you talk about the restoration and enhancement grant from the federal government. I just wanted to see, is there a deadline for us if we don't get the $10 million that we're set to lose that $12.6 million from the Fed, or is that there for the state of Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, the Restoration Enhancement Grant, there is no sunset date or time frame. However, idle money is available money in the terms of other projects that may be pursuing this grant program. As a matter of fact, state of Mississippi was not able to restore their service and turn back money, which ended up being part of our $12 million that we received. In terms of the construction grant, these things take time to get all the contracts in place with between the federal governments, between the states and the railroads. And we want to make sure we're making a commitment to move that project forward as quickly as possible too. When the funding is provided, it'll take approximately 3 years before service can commence. And again, there's a lot of agreements and a lot of lawyering to be done to make that happen.
Thank you, Mr. Crum. And seeing no further member questions, I want to say thank you both for coming by to present on MnDOT's program. Up next is House File 1109. Vice Chair Murphy, do you move House File 1109 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House File 1109 to come before the committee with a recommendation that it be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. With that motion, you can begin with your presentation.
House File 1109 is the high speed, well, not real high speed, but a speedy passenger rail service from Minneapolis to Duluth, as has already been stated, and the map showed where existing track already exists for the Northern Lights Express. Ken Bueller is here today as a technical advisory chair of the Northern Lights Express. And Derek James is a senior manager for Amtrak that can tell a lot more about the train than I can. But I want to tell you that last year when we had our bonding tours across the state, in every town that we toured where there was good railroad service of some kind, or even just freight service. Students at the local universities and colleges mentioned that they would use passenger rail a lot more than they are now if we had more passenger rail services. Community mayors and city councilors told the bonding committee that passenger rail service was not of the past. It is bringing people into the future because people want to do other things than look out the window while they're traveling if they are making repeated trips from one place to another. They would rather be doing their homework or doing reading or something that they could do on a passenger train instead of watching for traffic like they have to now if they are using Highway 35 or 94 or one of the other great highways that lead in and out of Minnesota. We heard people stressing the importance of having alternative travel arrangements for one-day trips, for two-day trips, for connecting with east and west coasts and north and south boundaries. And so it's important that we discuss and we try to meet the needs of options in transportation and not just be stuck with what we have. Mr. Bueller and Mr. James, will you make a better presentation of the details? And so we can go forth and answer any questions that the members of the committee have, and then get on to the next 1251 House file. But let us do 1109 as it deserves.
Mr. Bueller, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman Lee, representatives, Representative Murphy and staff, my name is Ken Bueller. I live in Duluth, Minnesota. I am the chair of the Technical Advisory Committee for the Northern Lights Express Project, and I can't think of doing a much better job than you already have, Representative Murphy. Thank you for making those opening comments. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. As appreciative as I am for the chance to speak to you, I miss that we are not all together at the state capitol. The opportunity to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and drive through bitter cold darkness over sometimes treacherous roads, snarled at times with traffic, be with you in person, always reminds me what a great idea it would be if I could take a train from Duluth Superior to Minneapolis and St. Paul. We are very close to that reality because of your past support, which I want to thank Representative Murphy and the others on this committee and in the House and Senate who have supported our efforts on behalf of the Northern Lights Express. NLX is a proposed passenger rail connection between Duluth Superior and Minneapolis on existing tracks at speeds up to 90 miles an hour with an average speed in the mid-60s. It would make a trip of about 2 hours and 25 minutes in journey time. I would like to elaborate on what Mr. James from Amtrak will be presenting by quoting a January 22nd of this year letter from Amtrak Chief Executive Officer William J. Flynn to members of Congress. He was commenting on Amtrak's 50th anniversary this year and, of course, laying out the agency's plans for the future, a future that looks pretty rosy right now. Under the heading of New Routes, Mr. Flynn said this to Congress. He was talking here about new service between pair cities less than 500 miles apart, of which Duluth Superior of Minneapolis certainly qualify. I'll quote Mr. Flynn from his own letter. We ask Congress to authorize and fund Amtrak's expansion in such corridors by allowing us to cover most of the initial capital and operating costs of new or expanded routes prior to requiring state partner cost sharing under Section 209 of the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act. Now, this is all tentative, and I got to say it's way in the early stages, but it does represent a whole new direction of thinking for Amtrak, one where they are taking the lead and not putting the burden of expanding new services on the states. That way they get to choose the routes that they feel will be the most successful. This is Amtrak's blueprint for the future that we know will be presented to a very passenger-friendly rail administration and Congress. And yes, NLX is in that plan. Because the Northern Lights Express project stands at the head of the class for expanding new corridors under this scenario, because we already have a finding of no significant impact. NLX has completed all the necessary federal studies, environmental reviews, and has been approved for federal investment under a myriad of existing funding programs, as Mr. Crom expressed. That's due in part to the fact that we've been at this for as long as it has taken to reach this milestone, and because of past support from the state of Minnesota and the Federal Railroad Administration, not to mention the members of the Joint Powers Alliance. Just this past weekend, I was reminded again by an article in the Star Tribune that the number one contributor to greenhouse gases is transportation, the moving of both freight and people. Trains have the lowest carbon footprint of any form of transportation for freight or people other than bulk freighters like 1,000-foot ore boats on the Great Lakes or ocean-going cruise ships. In the case of passengers traveling between Minneapolis and Duluth Superior, well, let's be honest, we're not going to get a cruise line on that corridor anytime soon, or probably ever. This is a freight rail project because of certain funding that has already been taking place, like the improvements in the last bonding bill for the Grassy Point Draw, which is a choke point here at the head of the lakes. That'll also pay dividends, though, for another train, a train that will change everything, the Northern Lights Express. We urge your approval. And we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Boudreaux. Next up, we have Derek James. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Derek James, Director of Government Affairs, Senior Manager of Government Affairs for Amtrak out of our Chicago office. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Murphy and members of the committee for allowing me to speak with you today. Amtrak is a private corporation created by Congress in 1970 to operate the nation's passenger rail system. After decades of decline because of competition from the highway and aviation networks, the American public sought from Congress a solution to the inability of the private sector railroads to sustain a profitable passenger rail system. That's why Amtrak was created. After being signed into law by President Nixon, we assumed control of the nation's passenger train system that was previously operated by 23 separate railroad companies. As Mr. Bueller indicated, Amtrak, we're in our 50th year of existence since that creation, and we couldn't be in a better position to capitalize on the last decade of investment that Congress has made with several states to advance mobility and the economic life of the 500 communities which we serve today. Since 2008, Congress and the last two administrations have invested $25 billion in rebuilding the Amtrak network for an America that frankly has shown a desire to have rail available to it, especially on corridors of 100 to 400 miles, like NLX and like TCMC. These are the corridors where Amtrak, where we have seen the most robust ridership growth. Last year prior to the pandemic, Amtrak saw its highest ridership in history. In 2019, Americans took more than 32 million trips on our intercity trains. The travelers have responded to the investments we've been making in upgraded stations, faster trains, more frequent daily departures. And those partnerships, those investments are possible because of investments made by the federal government, us, and state governments that we've done so in partnership with. New technology has allowed customers multiple channels to get train schedules, purchase tickets. Gone are the days where conductors are punching paper tickets. Customers can complete all their transactions using their handheld devices, including upgrades on board the train. Customers today can even see how full the train is, which is so important in these times of social distancing. The investments that Amtrak's been making in the railroad network is being felt locally, we think, in Minnesota. Amtrak today serves 8 Minnesota communities where we're making $10 million in upgrades to stations. We're rehabilitating restrooms and lighting, new parking, new passenger boarding platforms. Those sorts of improvements are coming to Winona, Red Wing, Staples, and Moorhead Fargo. Our investments that we are making also support the Minnesota business community. Your industrial and marketing services sectors help keep Amtrak trains rolling. In 2019, Amtrak spent $71 million purchasing goods and services from Minnesota firms, including $33 million that went to disadvantaged business enterprises in the state of Minnesota. But Amtrak wants to invest more in your state, especially to fulfill our mission of improving mobility for travelers between our major metropolitan areas and to the nation's small cities and rural communities. We will do that by adding more train service and more daily departures so students traveling to and from colleges, families, some without personal vehicles, can make important trips, and business people trying to get to a meeting. They'll now have the option, if we're able to invest with you in more service, have safe and convenient passenger train service. We're seeking a partnership with the state of Minnesota to help realize investments in the state's transportation infrastructure that we think will pay dividends for you for years with increased travel convenience for your families, your businesses, your students. Amtrak will soon be making public our vision for a network of frequent rail corridors connecting the majority of Americans with high quality, frequent train service. We will seek to further the partnership we've already had with Congress. They've indicated a willingness to work with us by their past investments. We'll ask for that support with the next surface transportation reauthorization. That partnership, though, needs the states to play a role locally. We want to work with you to stand up 2 new passenger rail routes, as you've seen already, Twin Cities to the Twin Ports of Duluth and Superior, the Northern Lights Express, and the Twin Cities with Red Wing, Winona, La Crosse, Milwaukee, and Chicago, the TCMC route. Amtrak supports HF 1109 and HF 1251, and Governor Walz has just announced local jobs and projects plan that includes $10 million as part of a multi-state and federal investment. That includes $10 million bring the TCMC corridor online and connect the Twin Cities with the Midwestern Amtrak hubs at Milwaukee and Chicago. The TCM project, as you've heard, is $53 million and will pay for track upgrades along the railroad. Wisconsin has pledged $6.7 million. Federal Rail Administration, $31.8 million. And Amtrak, we're going to kick in our $5 million as well. We just need $10 million from the state of Minnesota to finalize the design and literally to start laying tracks. Because as you saw, $40 million of that work is in the state of Minnesota. We could have trains up and running by 2024, doubling the number of daily departures at stations along the route. States like Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, and Missouri understand that transportation and economic advantages that come from having frequent rail service to their communities and are using federal grants to purchase new trains and locomotives, upgrade track, signal, and safety systems, and add new routes and train frequencies. Right now, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Amtrak and the federal government are going to be investing $300 million in upgrades to the very popular Milwaukee to Chicago Hiawatha service to take it from 14 trains a day to 20. Strong business and community support has led to the political support that supports new track, trains, and station investments to allow this expansion. Firms like SC Johnson and Miller Coors have made locational decisions based on the presence of the Hiawatha trains. It's the busiest Amtrak route in the Midwest, with almost 900,000 Amtrak passengers pre-pandemic. The TCMC expansion is really allowing an extension of that successful service up into the state of Minnesota and beginning to build out that corridor, which has been envisioned by Midwestern states and the federal government. Amtrak sees TCMC and the Northern Lights Express as critical components of the Midwestern network, and will continue to try and advance it in partnership with the federal government and you. I welcome your questions and hopefully look forward to hosting you aboard an Amtrak train one day. I accept your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. James. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Murphy or her testifiers? Seeing none, Representative Murphy, do you have any closing statement?
Mr. Chair, the invitation has been extended to us. We have to answer it. $10 million for investment of $40 million is a lot. We can make this work. Thank you for your cooperation.
Thank you, Vice Chair Murphy. House File 1109 is laid over. Right now, we'll move to House File 1251. I will move House File 1251 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill. Chair Hausman, House File 1251 is before us. Please present your bill. Madam Chair, you're on mute right now.
I should know that by now. Here's the dilemma. First of all, I said, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll repeat that. Here's the dilemma with current service. The train leaves the West Coast and then it runs into weather problems in the Idaho-Montana area. And then it runs into freight problems in the Dakotas and it arrives in St. Paul very late. And of course, if you're commuting to Chicago, that becomes a problem. So if we had a second train, it would leave from St. Paul at the same time every day. And so suddenly it becomes a more dependable transportation service. The 31.8 million federal match is looming. That is what we have to match with our 10 million Minnesota money. The federal money is in place. Wisconsin money is in place, Amtrak money is in place. We used to think that Wisconsin was was the problem, that they weren't putting their money on the table, but that they in fact have their money on the table. I'm currently a commissioner of the Council of State Governments Midwest Passenger Rail Council. They are strong supporters of this second train. At a recent meeting, I mentioned that the reason we were having difficulty with this 10 million match is there was partisan opposition to passenger rail. I can tell you, I looked at everybody's face in this virtual time when we could see them all on the screen, and everybody had this blank look, partisan opposition, because nowhere else in the Midwest is that the case. In Kansas, in Texas, everywhere, they are accepting federal money, they are matching it with their local money, moving ahead aggressively with these passenger rail corridors. We're an outlier in the Midwest. In the business and community, the business community and chambers understand that intercity passenger rail is part of the economic vitality of their region. I have several testifiers who will complete the picture of the second train.
Thank you, Chair Hausman. First up, we have Mr. Brian Nelson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, and thank you, Representative Hausman and Commission members. Jenny, I'm wondering if you can put up our present. Hello, I'm Brian Nelson with All Aboard Minnesota. We are a nonprofit citizen advocacy group, and our platform is to expand intercity passenger rail throughout the state of Minnesota and connecting us to the upper Midwest. What you're viewing right here is our map of our proposed new routes, and it looks very much like what Dan Crum presented. This largely mirrors the MnDOT State Rail Plan, of which we are very supportive. Right now, we're really proposing four routes as having the greatest propensity for adding a frequency to Fargo-Moorhead, new service from the Twin Cities to Albert Lea, Des Moines, Kansas City that would connect us with Amtrak service to the West Coast, and of course, new service to Duluth, which you've heard about already. We believe that by adding these routes, we're greatly expanding travel options to a lot of outstate Minnesota cities that really only have highways as an option today. Next slide, please. The route that we really want to focus on for the purpose of today's hearing is the second train frequency between the Twin Cities and Chicago. Dan really did a great job of outlining what that service looks like, but it really is going to offer a very competitive service to driving on a 7.5-hour schedule, 4 to 6 hours opposite the Empire Builder. And what we've modeled, and these figures are a little bit different than what Dan presented, and I'll explain that in just a minute, but what we've modeled is that there would be approximately 155,000 new riders generated by this new service annually. And 60 plus percent of those riders would be taken out of cars. Next slide, please. All Aboard Minnesota has partnered with the Rail Passengers Association, which is a national rail advocacy group. They have tools and methodology to model out proposed ridership, economic, and mobility benefits for basically any route in the country. And we asked them to do a study on the second train, specifically between the Twin Cities and Chicago. And one of the most significant findings out of that study is that the state of Minnesota would realize a tremendous ROI benefit. So for an estimated annual investment operating cost of $2 to $3 million, the state would realize a benefit of $25 million annually. Next slide, please. Also significantly, the second train will drive what's called induced demand. It will otherwise generate trips that would not be taken without this service. And that induced demand alone will generate almost 2.9 million of new revenue into Minnesota's economy each year through new visitor spending. Interestingly enough, as Derek James and others have mentioned, there are a lot of new corridor services being added throughout the country right now. And what we found is that not only do adding new frequencies double patronage, but sometimes can triple and quadruple patronage. And that's mainly because it offers more travel options. These services are much more accessible to people. It offers real convenience and options for people who don't want to drive or fly. We believe that the St. Paul to Chicago corridor could realize the same benefit. Next slide, please. So as we mentioned, 60% of these new riders would be taken out of cars, which greatly reduces car miles in the corridor, also reducing highway costs significantly. And because trains are so much more safer than cars, there's going to be a lot of accident costs avoided. Next slide, please. We know that you've heard a lot about climate change, and that's already been mentioned here. I wanted to give you some stats around Amtrak's energy efficiency. As you can see here, Amtrak trains are far more energy efficient than cars, light trucks, or airplanes. Next slide, please. And so because of that energy efficiency, the emissions footprint is greatly reduced. So by taking a train over a car or an airplane means that emissions are reduced by anywhere from 80 to 84%, which really reduces the greenhouse gas footprint. Next slide, please. So Dan and others have already really gone over a nice job of presenting where we are from a funding perspective. I'd just like to add and expand on that a little bit, that the Canadian Pacific Railway, of which this train would run from St. Paul to Chicago, is very supportive of this new service. They sent a letter to the Federal Railroad Administration expressing their support, and it really will enhance their freight operations through the state. So I just wanted to emphasize that. It's going to speed goods and services. And also to emphasize a point that, as Representative Hausman mentioned, a lot of states around us are really investing in passenger rail service. Wisconsin, Michigan, Illinois, Missouri, Kansas, Texas, they're realizing the benefits that passenger rail offers, and we believe that the state of Minnesota should too. And as a final point, I'd just like to let the committee know that for 43 years, the corridor between St. Paul and Chicago was a very successful corridor from a passenger standpoint. It was run by the Milwaukee Road, it was run by Amtrak in the 70s, and it was named the Twin Cities Hiawatha. And because of that previous success, and as we've modeled for you here, we believe this corridor has tremendous success opportunity. So thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Next up, we have Mr. Rogenbach. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Roggenbuck. I'm a senior transportation planner with Ramsey County Public Works. I am also staff to the Great River Rail Commission. I'll be the first speaker of three from the Great River Rail Commission. We have so many good things to say about this project, we couldn't limit it to just one speaker. I'll touch on a few topics here. The ridership numbers that Brian described and that Dan Crome also provided to you represent a doubling of the current ridership of passenger rail service between the Twin Cities and Chicago. So this is no small project. This is doubling the current ridership that we have. The ridership just in Minnesota alone represents about a third of that increase. So about 39,000 riders would be getting on the train, getting off the train in St. Paul, in Red Wing and Winona. And this represents the service in this corridor from La Crosse, Winona, La Crescent, all the way up to the Twin Cities. A little more than half of the population within Minnesota will be within 30 miles of a station. So this access is more than just the Twin Cities. It's a service to all of southeastern Minnesota. Benjamin Franklin said that a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, this project, the Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago, second train will save freight haulers $34 million annually in saved costs from operating and inventory control. It costs more than $1,200 an hour to move a freight train through this corridor. And each train that moves through this corridor carries products, finished products, raw materials, valued at approximately $7 million. And when you can save time hauling these goods, getting them to market, getting them to their destination, these shippers save time and money that they can pass on to their customers and their clients. Some of the improvements in the second train project include improving the swing point, the points on the swing bridge connecting La Crosse to La Crescent. That'll improve speeds in that small segment of the corridor by 5 miles per hour. Other improvements in the La Crescent area will relieve a bottleneck. We'll be adding mainline track, converting siding into mainline track. That can improve speeds in that segment by 10 miles per hour. It's not a lot for you and I in a car to go 5 miles an hour faster for a small segment, but for a train hauling that much value and that much inventory, it's a significant savings. And finally, the safety aspects of this train. The second train provides safety aspects. As well as Brian had just mentioned, it will reduce vehicle miles of travel. And vehicle miles of travel, there are accident rates associated with that. So if we can move enough people out of their cars onto the trains, a safer mode of travel, we can expect to reduce the number of auto crashes along the corridor. The project will also include improvements at 8 different intersections in the city of Winona alone. Some of those improvements will include new warning devices at intersections, and all of those intersections will receive new track panels, so travel over those crossings can be safer and they can be more comfortable. Another important aspect of this project is simply the location of the tracks through the city of Winona. We can clear, as trains move through the city at a slow rate of speed as they must through an urban area, they block traffic, they block intersections. These improvements can help move trains through the city of Winona much faster. They can clear intersections much faster and create a safer environment for travel through the city. And finally, in addition to that, we learned that Winona Health is the major hospital in the city of Winona. Their hospital facility is located on the south side of the tracks. Their ambulance dispatch service is located on the north side of the tracks. When trains are moving through Winona very slowly, blocking intersections, it creates a terrible safety condition for the city of Winona should an ambulance service need to get to the hospital immediately. Finally, worth noting, positive train control has been implemented throughout this corridor by Canadian Pacific Railway, and Amtrak service is able to use those features in terms of positive train control. With that, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'll turn it over to Paul Drodos, the next speaker from the Great River Rail Commission.
Thank you, Mr. Roggenbuck. Mr. Drodos, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Paul Drodos, and I'm the Vice Chair of the Great River Rail Commission. Before I got the job as Cudahy County Commissioner, I was the Environmental Officer for the City of Red Wing and a member of CARE, the Red Wing Community Awareness Emergency Response Team. Now, that's a mouthful, but what it means is if there was a rail spill near the Mississippi, then you took the call, you jumped in the boat, you deployed the boom, and you protected the river. The emergency didn't happen on my watch, but the drills were a testament to the fact that railroads care deeply about safety and the environment. Only 5 words the second train to Chicago describe an opportunity to create jobs,
boost tourism and lighten the carbon footprint without the inconveniences of either driving or flying. With all the talk about electric vehicles and hybrids nowadays, isn't it amazing that nobody is celebrating the most successful hybrid of all time, and that's the diesel locomotive? Passenger rail is 30% more energy efficient per passenger mile and 20% more efficient than airplanes. We don't have to paint the trains green. They're already green. 41% of the concerned generation college students that are coming of age now are using passenger rail in Winona. The second train is projected to raise that total to 57%. Unlike other transportation, passenger rail gets more efficient the more you use it. And after all, you can always add another car. And that's maybe where some of the discrepancies of the savings or the efficiencies are. But the TCMC second train is expected to save more than 17.3 million vehicle miles of travel beginning in 2024. Amtrak is also improving the inside environment with new cars, including advanced air filtration against viruses, and of course, total internet for business and entertainment. I believe that the future of our environment demands a new train of thought, and that train is the TCMC second train to Chicago. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Mr. Jordos. Next up, we have Commissioner Mata Castillo. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Trista Matas Castillo, Ramsey County Commissioner. You have heard a lot of data and a lot of numbers over the last several minutes of testifiers, and it's really exciting to hear so many organizations also advocating for the second train, and Representative Hausman has been a long champion of this effort, and we so appreciate her. I want to just touch on the people aspect of this. You know, for us, the train isn't just about the money. The money is obviously really important. And with $4 million of new revenue brought into Minnesota from tourism with an added second train, but it's also about the people and it's about equity. We know that people of color, immigrant, lower income folks, as well as new citizens are more likely to use trains. And we welcome them here in the Twin Cities, definitely, and to Minnesota. And to have this train as an option for travel and transit is really incredibly important. I know my mother-in-law, who is an immigrant from Guatemala and lives in Illinois, only takes the train to come visit us and her grandchildren. And it really is an opportunity to say, like, this is how people feel comfortable, safe to travel. It's also much more user-friendly for people who might have physical disabilities to get on and off and be able to move around on the train. And so we so appreciate that. I also want to add that the Prairie Island Indian community and their tribal council are very excited about the potential expansion of a second train. Because of their work down at Prairie Island, they have over 1 million visitors a year, and they think a train is going to expand that even further to help reboost their economy after COVID and the shutdowns. And so we really do have an opportunity here to invest in people into it by investing in this train. And we're grateful to Governor Walz for including it in his bonding bill. We're grateful for you hearing this bill today with the possible inclusion. And we just want to thank everyone for investing in not only the train for our environment, but also for the people who use it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Members, do we have any questions for Representative Hausman or her testifiers? Seeing none, thank you both Commissioner Drodos and Mata Castillo for coming by. Chair Hausman, any closing statement?
Mr. Chair, I thank the committee for your time and your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. So House File 1251 is laid over. Now we'll move to House File 1005. I will move House File 1005 to get it before the committee with a recommendation that it is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Bonding Bill. Chair Pawlowski, House File 1005 is before us. Please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is the traditional funding bill for the Winona ports and other ports in Minnesota. You've already had a summary of those ports, so I'm not going to repeat that. I'm going to concentrate a little bit on the Winona port. You can see in back of me the latest in the additions to what comes to Winona by barge. These are the giant wind turbine blades. This was quite an event for Winona. You had people coming from the entire southeastern Minnesota area to take pictures of these giant blades being transported to Winona, offloaded on trucks. For those of you that attended the Winona mini session, you also traveled on the road that the Winona Port is on if you went to the Marine Art Museum exhibit on Thursday, October 4th, for the Winona mini session. So the road that goes to the ports also goes to the Marine Art Museum, which is also a big attraction in Winona. At one time, Winona had more millionaires per capita than any other city in the United States. Those millionaires built their fortunes on lumber, lumber that traveled by river, lumber that traveled by rail. You've heard today repeatedly the importance of rail and the importance of river traffic. And now river traffic not only handles goods, it handles things that are essential to the 21st century energy environment that we are in. So Mr. Chair and members, with that, I'll conclude my comments. I think we have Jeff Stolenwerk, the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. I think he wants to talk a little bit about Duluth. That will conclude my comments. I'll stick around for any questions.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. Mr. Stolenwerk, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Stolenwerk. I'm the Director of Government and Environmental Affairs at the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. I speak today on behalf of the Duluth Port, as well as the other ports that are members of the Minnesota Ports Association. The three river ports that join us in the Minnesota Ports Association are St. Paul, Red Wing, and Winona. We formed the Ports Association almost 30 years ago to work with the legislature and the Minnesota Department of Transportation to identify infrastructure needs and secure funding for port infrastructure projects. We appreciate the partnership that has evolved and the state support that we have received during the intervening years. All four of our ports have made significant improvements with matching grants from the Port Development Assistance Program. The projects we have undertaken have enhanced our ability to serve customers who rely on our waterways for efficient and low-cost transportation of bulk commodities to national and international markets. With each investment we make, we improve the competitive position of several of sectors of Minnesota's economy. While the activity relating to loading and unloading cargo takes place at our ports, the benefits are shared all across the state. Our ports move soybeans, corn, other grains down the Mississippi River and out the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Seaway system. Our paper industry receives material for papermaking process and uses port facilities to stage the shipment of their finished product to market. Our mines rely on the port to move taconite to the steel mills on the lower Great Lakes. Moving commodities by water produces less pollution, results in fewer worker injuries, and provides greater fuel efficiency and most significantly lower costs. I'd like to quickly walk through some of the past and future projects to highlight the important improvements that have been made with the support of the Port Development Assistance Program. At Red Wing, the Port Authority was able to establish a new bulkhead on the south end of town near a major customer. The previous bulkhead had been at the north end of town where barges unloaded product used in the manufacture of ceiling tiles. That material was delivered from the river's edge to a manufacturer on the south end of Red Wing. This meant throughout the year, large dump trucks moved through the heart of Red Wing continuously to deliver material to this manufacturer. By establishing a new bulkhead on the south end of town, thousands of trucks were spared the trip through the city. This project produced cost savings for the company and made significant safety improvements for the citizens of Red Wing. The next Red Wing projects will make improvements to the bulkhead at the south end of town and repair and replace mooring facilities at the levee dock in the center of town. In Winona, the Port Development Assistance Program has been used to expand staging and fleeting areas for barge traffic and rehabilitate and build new docks in the commercial harbor. This has allowed Winona to accommodate more river traffic and handle more products. Winona is currently updating their harbor survey to measure the economic activity or impact of port activity. In the last such survey, 70% of the businesses who relied on the port responded with information about employment and wages. At that time, businesses responded, employed more than 80 people earning an average wage in excess of $42,000. Winona will have updated jobs and wage data as it completes a new survey this year. The next projects pending in Winona calls for expanding and improving docking facilities to enhance access and riverfront capacity. The St. Paul Port Authority has used the port development funds to complete much needed dock wall rehabilitation projects and creation of a new dock wall to allow two new river dependent businesses to ship via the Mississippi River. Most recently, the St. Paul Port Authority built a heavy lift transfer pad, and they are about to start construction on extending rail to this facility to create direct barge to rail transload capability at the Southport Terminal. St. Paul has another project in permitting to create a new offload area to allow for high demand cement and concrete additives to be shipped via the inland waterways to St. Paul. The Port Authority's current request includes funding to repair or replace loading cells that are in poor condition and at risk of failure, and funding to accommodate passenger river cruise boats to dock and embark on the Mississippi River cruises starting and ending at our state's capital. Finally, in Duluth, our cargoes include heavy lift machinery for mining, oil and gas production, construction, wind energy, pulp and paper, and energy transmission industries. In 2020, our Clear Public Marine Terminal handled a record 525,000 freight tons of wind energy components. The Port Authority has invested $27 million in the Clear Terminal since 2015, and the state has contributed $4.25 million of this total. With these funds, we have fully rehabilitated the former Garfield C&D dock, adding two new heavy lift berths and rebuilding nearly 1,800 feet of dock wall, as well as adding on dock rail and 26 acres of high quality outdoor laydown area. We have also built a new road through the Clear terminal, correcting traffic flow through the Clear and enabling us to open up our intermodal terminal, the only intermodal terminal outside of the Twin Cities. These types of improvements have enabled us to provide flexible freight solutions to our customers. We operate these assets with the goal of providing supply chain cost savings to our regional industries and to keep them competitive in a global marketplace. In December, we closed on the purchase of a 7.5-acre dock, the Duluth Lakeport Dock, located out on Rice's Point next to our Clear Terminal. Our future use of this property is still in the planning phases, but our goal is to revitalize the pier and bring it back to life in a way that contributes to our regional economy and further expands our services to customers within the regions and around the globe. The first phase of redevelopment of this dock is repairing the dock walls and demolishing dilapidated outmoded structures. And the cost of this initial work is going to be about $18 million. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we are grateful to Representative Pawlowski for carrying the Port Development Assistance Bill. We also appreciate your time and attention to this matter as we work in partnership with the state to ensure low-cost shipment of Minnesota commodities to national and international markets. With that, I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stalin. What members, do we have any questions for Representative Pawlowski or his testifier? Seeing none, Chair Pawlowski, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much, and I am hopeful that we will have a bonding bill this session.
Thank you, Chair Pawlowski. House File 1005 is laid over. Members, our next meeting is Thursday, February 25th. On the agenda is a presentation for the Metropolitan Council on the Bus Rapid Transitway Development, two related BRT lines, and the Safe Routes to School Bill, which will all be laid over. This meeting is adjourned.